So you get excited because they're excited, gets me excited, gets all of our fans excited, and our sponsors. So it's going to work out.
Bless you, boys! Unbelievable! I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
Step into the well-informed, ill-advised, and oddly entertaining world of Talkin' Sports.
Here we go!
Light the candle!
Well, here we are, another goddamn Sunday night Talkin' Sports podcast. Matty Lang's here. What do you want to talk about, man? Aaron Sanchez hurt his fucking fingernail again today. Matt Shoemaker's out for the year with his ACL. CFL, they're fucking around doing a European draft with no CBA. All kinds of shit we could talk about here tonight, man.
That doesn't even hit my news wire.
No, fuck. Year.
You're going to come to me with CFL talk?
Yeah, well.
NBA and NHL playoffs?
That's what I got for you, man.
NFL draft's coming up on Thursday, and you're talking to me to CFL European draft? Where did this go off the rails?
It just means the CFL has better scouts.
25 seconds
looking in Denmark.
Off the rails.
Leafs lose game 6. Raptors win game 4, I think. No, game 3.
Game 4.
Yeah, no, okay. So it's a bit of a mixed bag of a day. As we sit here, we got Sharks and Golden Knights still going on. I can't believe that Martin Jones and his .889 save percentage couldn't cling to a 1-0 lead for the entire game. So they're going hard. Where do you want to start, man? You want to hit the good first? You want to hit the bad first? Where are you at?
Let's start with the good, man. I'm feeling we need to start with a good thing here. We need to get you on a good frame of mind.
Good luck to
before
you.
before we just go completely off
Holy
the rails.
Holy fuck!
Here.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm feeling a little bit of tension out of your voice here. And the last time we did one of these late night pods after a tough Leaf loss, the both of us just
funny
you know,
that eh?
Like
Leaf losses, big tough
down.
Leaf fucking losses. Yeah, all right. Raptors right, win so- by like 50 points or something.
We stopped keeping. You know when they put Jordy Meeks and Moreland and Jeremy Lin in. That's basically a 50-point lead, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, no, for sure. So Raptors grab a 3-1 series lead. And I guess all that talk after game one is a distant memory, as you suggested it would be, that this might be a 5-game series. But in reality, the Raptors were the far better team. I guess we just have to do our game one loss thing because it's just tradition now. but since then, the boys have looked a lot better. Kawhi's looked a lot better. I guess he's been battling some sort of illness down there, which no load management for the flu. You just got to play through it.
Yeah, you know, funny thing, right? As soon as he got to that warm, humid weather in Orlando, he got sick.
Let's keep him up north where right? it's nice and cool, keep, man.
That's he, right.
You don't want to go to California.
Like
that's right. what did you see out of game 4 here, man? It was another one that, I guess through the first quarter, it looked a little bit like Orlando might make a game of it, but as it went along, Toronto pulled away and again ended up winning it pretty comfortably. Anything stand out to you?
Yeah, game 4 was a lot better of a watch than game 3 was, to be honest, and I'll be honest, you know, game 3 was on the same time as game 5 of the Leafs games, so I think like most people, I found myself in a bar situation that was lovingly playing both games.
Nice.
And would flip the commentary on depending on who was playing. So we got a good opportunity to watch both games. Unfortunately, both of those endings came right down to the wire. And that game three scarily looked very similar to game one to me.
Yeah.
Raptors came out big, got a little nonchalant, let Orlando back in. This time they were able to hold off any big 14-0 runs or whatever happened in that first game and clung to that win. This game looked a lot different. Orlando came out really on fire. I don't think the Raptors scored for their first 5 possessions or something like that.
Phew.
But they were the team that stuck in. What kept them in, I think they had something crazy, like 11 steals over the game. 5 or 6 block shots. They were just phenomenal on defense, and that really let their offense do their thing over time. Kawhi was just fucking absolutely amazing. So was Siakam. Siakam's just slowly gotten better and better as the series has gone on. Kyle Lowry was just dominating, just an absolute floor general today. and Marc Gasol, who we talked about a little bit, going against Vucevic, they've just completely taken him out of the game, which was no tall which is a very tall order. Raptors had a lot of trouble, like we talked about, with him all regular season. Mm-hmm. Now with Marc Gasol, he's an absolute non-discussion. I think the guy who actually worries me the most on this team right now is Isaac.
Really?
And he's really only a, he's the biggest concern from a Raptors offense perspective, sure. Right? Because Isaac is, he's changing shots. What they really did well today with him is they went right after him, got him two quick fouls, taken out of the game. And then that's when the offense opened up. So, the Raptors are, this is a crazy set. For as many times as the Raptors go to the bucket and as, dangerous offensively as they are the least, they've gotten the least free throws in the playoffs out of 16 teams.
Wow.
Which is just absolutely insane. The stat at the end of the game today was, are likely, you know, barring the apocalypse happening, next round opponent should be Philadelphia. And they have gone to the free throw the most amount of times in the 16 teams that are in the playoffs, which is just insane. It's something like 33 to 12 or something, I think, the two teams average. So
I'm almost numb to the fact that a Toronto team can't get a fucking call, but it seems to be happening in multiple leagues at a time.
You know, at least there's some consistency across the leagues, if nothing else.
I guess.
Man, I mean, there's not too much to say about the Raptors realistically, and I don't know how much of the game you caught tonight, but it was a complete domination of a game, which is what we expected and what we talked about before the series and after game one, right? This was going to be a team in Orlando that was going to try very hard. They've got a lot of young guys. They were going to put the pressure on Toronto, mm-hmm. but at the end of four quarters, you should see a team with the three best players in the series come out on the winning side every goddamn time.
Yeah. Do you think this is in a position then, do you expect them to close it out in five or... I keep hearing it's hard to put a team away, you know, when they're on the ropes. I know this is slightly different. This is a much bigger, you know, gap in talent, you know, Raptors versus what the Leafs are doing. But, you know, should they finish this off or is there a chance that, you know, Orlando's going to put one more, you know, big run together, kind of like they did in one, kind of like they did in three, just to, you know, try and force this out a little longer?
Yeah, you know, you expect Orlando to come out strong, right? They're professional basketball players. They should all intend to come out with at least one big quarter at some point.
Yeah.
So the Raptors have to be aware of that, and I'm sure they will be. One thing I noticed today, and again, if you're watching kind of midway through the third quarter, they just look defeated. They look deflated.
Yeah.
Their hearts were broken. You know, the wind was taken right out of their sails. All those great sports euphemisms you can use.
Were you watching the Raptors game, or do you have a fucking camera in my living room? I'm looking disheartened. I'm looking defeated. I'm taking a little joy in Orlando's suffering as I'm sitting taking that in.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? I mean, you still expect them to come out strong in an elimination game. Every team should.
Yeah.
But that was a team that just, it looked like after halftime, they were like, oh, fuck. Right. You know, reality started to sink in and they're realizing, hey, this was great for us this year, but we don't have what it takes to play with the big boys here. And that's really what the Raptors had to accomplish at some point in this series, right?
Take the spirit out of them a little.
I think as a Raptor fan, you were looking forward to that, right? You wanted to see the Raptors do this because they've never done this.
Yeah.
And it's taken, taken Masai trading out 3/5 of our starting lineup and replacing them with just killers, right? In Gasol and Kawhi and Danny Green and guys who have been to higher levels of basketball than the Raptors have ever gone to.
Yeah.
And being able to, you know, take that mentality with them into the rest of the team. And I think that's made a huge, huge difference. The benches continue to play pretty well. I know there was some talk, I think after game one, they didn't have a great game, but, you know, Norm Powell's come on very strong the last couple days.
We the Norm.
Serge Ibaka had another great game. Norm actually played fantastic today, man. I got to say, he made some great cuts and some reverse layups that were just spectacular that in a tighter game would get a little more attention.
Sure.
But he was just fantastic. And, you know, Patrick McCaw came back. I didn't even realize he was activated for last game on Friday night, but he actually got some playing time with the game out of hand today. We're going to need him going forward at some point. So it was good to have him back. And Given that OG.
Any word on OG?
I'm still expecting him to be out at least since the Eastern Conference Final.
Yeah, okay.
Right? It's been, what, a week and a half now?
Yeah.
Since the emergency appendectomy. And, 2 weeks at best, most likely 3 weeks is really the timetable. And he's got to get himself back into a little bit of conditioning. So,
right.
We can probably expect to hear that he's going to start shooting some buckets by the end of the week. But I really wouldn't expect him into any sort of game time, taking any sort of contact, anything like that.
Is this one of those ones where you're happy to see him get back in the conference final or whenever it might be, presuming that you get there, but don't ever expect him to be the same this year? Like, he'll get back, but he's not going to be 100%?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And unfortunately, the guy's dealt with a lot of stuff this year. It's unfortunate, and I'm sure he's just ready for this year to be over in some ways.
Yeah.
Maybe being able to come back in a very small role in the Eastern Conference Final, if, fingers crossed we get there, might be helpful to him, only having to play a couple minutes a game. And maybe that's if he could give us 110% for that small amount of time. Mm-hmm. But I can't see him playing the 15 to 20 minutes that he normally would play.
Right.
It's too big of a surgery. And because it takes you out of commission for so long, there's just too much deconditioning that happens. And again, having a huge surgery, across your abdomen, you're not going to be as strong.
No, for sure.
And in a pro sport game, you typically need to be pretty strong.
Core is important.
Yeah. And the way these guys take bumps and the way that he usually plays a little recklessly around the rim, I don't know if he's going to feel the comfort that he needs to feel.
Right.
And we've seen this the last couple years. 2 years ago was Kyle with the elbow, and then last year was Fred VanVleet with the shoulder. And even though they come back and they can hit a couple shots, they're just not the same guys. You don't trust your body to take those bumps.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't play like that, right? You can't play with that thought in your head. You have to be, and that goes for every sport, right? You have to trust your body.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing it, I think, a little bit on the other side. With Jay Gardner, he's clearly not skating like he's used to. He's had a back injury for however long, right? And he's back, but he's not back, right? Like, it's,
yeah, he's not back, although I think for whatever reason, because of that, he's actually making better passes out of our end.
Well, I think he's less willing to skate with it, right? So
yeah,
he can make a few less risky plays, and I don't know, could be. So game five goes Tuesday
night. It's gonna be another big Tuesday night in Toronto,
head-to-head, Leafs at the same time. I don't know what the hell they were thinking today or what the problem is, but I saw that the Leafs tweet before their game this afternoon that if you were there at Maple Leaf Square and you were staying for the Raptors game, you had to leave after the Leaf game and come back in for the Raptors game. And you're like, you're fucking standing around outside in a square. What's the problem? Like, I don't understand that at all. They're not charging admission. It's not a ticketed thing. Like, it's just weird, man. I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, I thought that was strange, considering most fans in the city are fans of the Leafs and the Raptors.
Yeah. If you're already there and you've got a prime spot, I'm not leaving. I'll stick around and watch both.
And in fact, I'd even wager to say that fans of those two teams are typically fans of TFC as well,
yeah,
if given a chance. So it was a very weird tweet that I saw that came across my timeline as well. The only thought I could have was maybe they want to make sure Raptor fans who weren't willing to come in so early for the Leafs game had a chance to get in.
I can see that.
But I did think it was a little bit kind of odd.
Yeah.
I noticed there were quite a few fans who were still wearing their Leaf jerseys when it became Jurassic Park.
Sure.
Fuck, man. I don't know. Kind of a stupid thing, but, let MLSE do, make some PC decisions there sometimes, right?
Well, since you don't have any European draft thoughts from the CFL, I guess we'll get to the fucking Leafs.
Listen, I'd be more excited if they did an Australian draft and were drafting kickers.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would get me excited.
I'd be more excited if they'd just focus on the goddamn CBA and getting a season together before drafting kids out of Amsterdam. But
so are you saying I shouldn't just go ahead and get my tickets for the Argos just yet?
Change the time of their home opener to accommodate an Arkells concert. That's I'm not sure what the problem was there, but maybe another doubleheader, just like at Maple Leaf Square. So,
well, see, at least that makes sense to me. Those are going to be the same fans out, right?
So. Yes, obviously.
I mean, if there's going to be 20,000 people at an Arkells concert, you're like, well, then who the hell's going to a fucking Argos game?
Yeah, 7,000 of them at best.
You know, it's going to be an interesting thing, and this just made me think of it right now as you said that. My Wolfpack tickets just got dropped off on Thursday. And it's going to be an interesting thing as this is the first year the Wolfpack aren't doing a full 8-week stand in Toronto. So for the last 2 years, those of you who don't know about the Wolfpack, there are professional rugby team that actually travels back and forth to Europe to play teams in the second division of the rugby league there right now, trying to qualify for the Premier League. In the past, because of issues with travel and the price, and then last year it was because of renovations happening at their home stadium of Lamport Stadium, they had to play 8 weeks straight in Toronto. This is the first time they're going to be playing two games at home, traveling back, coming back for three, going back for two. It's going to be interesting to see how they're able to, or how their fans are going to respond. Let me say that. Because in the past season, it actually grew incrementally.
Yeah, you can kind of build a little momentum, right? Every week you're there.
Exactly. You build momentum and you're front and center in a neighborhood, the West End of Toronto into Liberty Village. You're kind of there. People start to realize you're there every week, but it also shortens the season and people, you know, following the season. Doing it this way, their first home game Sunday, it's their only Sunday game of the season coming up this weekend. It's going to be interesting to see how they do in comparison to the Argos because they got up to 9,200 people last year.
Well, you're right there in the neighborhood with the Argos.
Yeah, which is, I'm pretty sure it's what they call a sellout at Lamport, although I don't think they count the number of people who actually just sit in the beer tents. So I'm sure there might have been another 1,000 or so every game, but that weren't accounted for. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Argos this year because there hasn't been much talk about them so far.
Yeah.
There hasn't been much CFL vibe, and maybe that's because, again, you know, we got the Leafs and Raptors doing pretty well right now, and there's still some chatter about those Blue Jays every once in a while.
Back to a game under 500.
Doing way better than everybody thought, right? Yeah. So, you know, within striking distance of a couple teams, at least right now, we'll see how long they can hold up with all those injuries.
Pitching staff goes down in one day. That's fucking fun.
I know, great day for the
Where's JoJo Reyes?
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting for those Wolfpack guys. And man, if they put up 9,000 fans a game, and the Argos are sitting around 10, that's not a good look for the CFL. I don't care what people say.
Right? The Argos are an older thing, and they feel uncool. Like even if they're drawing 12,000, that's a joke in the CFL. It's 3,000 more than the rugby team, but the rugby team's not expected to do as much. So they feel like the cool, hip thing, the new thing going on, right? And so you're more willing to go and give that a chance. And it's going to be really hard for the Argos to kick that kind of stale vibe in the face of so much competition right now. But before we move over to the Leafs, what are you drinking right now? What do you got going tonight?
Oh, I saved a special one for the podcast tonight. I've got Spearhead Hawaiian IPA.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's one I found a couple years ago, but I hadn't seen for a very long time. It's not your your coconut flavor, I'll tell you that much, my man. But it's got more of a pineapple.
You'd expect that with the Hawaiian.
Theme. It's got a little bit of a pineapple. It's still very much an IPA, pretty hoppy, definitely strong.
Okay,
definitely strong. But again, something that's. It's got like a little bit of fruity, little citrus finish to it. It's nice. It's a little more refreshing than your typical IPAs.
Okay. I finished up my spring mix pack here, or what was left of it. My co-host was pilfering shit out of it there, unbeknownst to me at one point, so I missed a couple of days.
What a guy.
Yeah. So I finished that up. They had a Brute IPA from Nito was one of the last ones I had there. You know me, I'm not a huge IPA guy, but it was a pretty tasty. And especially if you're into IPAs, you could tell, you know, that'd be something that a lot of people were into. A couple from Big Rig to wrap it up. So, as always, you know, I enjoy those sorts of things. It's a cool way to try a couple of new things, especially from around the area. So I hope they keep doing stuff like that. Shout out to our friends at Nita Beer Company for putting it together. If you're interested in that, they've still got them going on at nitabeer.com or just at their location. We'll link to that in the show notes. Today, like I said, that was gone. So it was mostly a rum day with the big Leaf game going on. I have had the keg going here. We've got what's it called? Grindstone Amber Ale from Broadhead Brewing Company is what's going on there too. So it's been back and forth between those things mostly today. But
is Broadhead around Ottawa?
Yeah, Broadhead is just off the 417 here in town. So you know, if you're in the area, check them out as well. Or sorry, Broadhead's just off Hunt Club Road here at the south end. I'm thinking of our friends at Vimy. I got too many beers on the mind, man. Too many brewers that were that were working.
You've had
with.
Too many beers in the belly today after that game.
Well, there's something to that for sure too. Why don't we get into it?
Now, before we get into that stuff, I got to tell you this live game and live text messages coming across the phone right now.
Okay,
one just got me a little bit, caught me laughing there for a second. So, Vegas and San Jose, 8 minutes left in the first OT right now. San Jose's season on the line at Vegas. I've got a friend who has season tickets to Vegas.
Okay,
so she's down at the game and. Now, she picked up hockey as Vegas came to town
sure. And
got really excited about it. And, you know, obviously last season they had a lot of success and have been a very good team again this year. She just messaged me and said, wait, there's no shootouts in playoffs? I said, no. And she said, so they just play overtime and
forever.
Then overtime again?
Yeah.
So after I held a laugh and all I could respond with was, yep, they just play hockey until somebody basically dies. It's basically Game of Thrones going on here.
And it might be their goddamn fans. First, you see some of these five overtime. I can tell you what, with Martin Jones in one end, it's not going five overtimes. But,
I want to know how long Little John stays in his front row seat. That's what I'm looking forward to knowing here today. That's the big excitement.
I heard he was in the house. And last year during the playoffs, they had him up in like the booth where like the DJ and the announcer are and stuff, and they'd had him getting the fans all fired up. I'm not sure if they're still doing that, but I know he's a Golden Knights fan, so that's pretty cool.
He's there with Gordon Ramsay today.
I saw that too. Someone tweeted that. I thought, like, that's a really weird pairing.
The unlikeliest of friends, I guess. I don't know.
Turn down for Hell's Kitchen or whatever we're doing. That's not even Little John, I don't think. But shows my fucking... look, I got to tell you something that I was texting towards, I don't know, somewhere probably going into the third period of the Leaf game. I'm exchanging a couple of texts with a friend, and I said, you know what is the most infuriating part of sports is that everyone knew this was coming. We all said at the beginning, super close series between two great teams. It's going to be tightly matched and it's going to be long. And this is not going to be easy. And that's where we are right now. And it makes you fucking crazy. Like,
I know.
You knew it was coming. And here it is, exactly as predicted. And yet, fuck, right? As it's going down, I'm just... And what was so frustrating to me about this game, and everybody's got a take, and believe me, I want yours. I didn't want half of Twitter's. I unfollowed like 300 people today. As the first period starts, the Leafs got off to a great start. Boston had a couple of chances too, but Toronto was skating fine. They're getting in. They're getting some chances. The Matthews line is really going. And it looks like we got a really good chance here. And Toronto scores first. And then I think it's the Tyler Ennis penalty. Yeah, it is. At the far, which it's a little ticky-tack. The NHL officials have two modes. One is that we're going to call literally everything, and the other mode is you can shoot someone in the face with a hunting bow, and we're not going to call it. And so Tyler Ennis gets a chintzy call, whatever. It sends Boston to the power play. No problem. But they go to commercial, and we come back, and there's something wrong with the glass, right? They're trying to fix one of the seams or whatever, and there's this long delay, and this crowd that was so amped up is dying. And the Bergeron line going out for this power play is getting more and more rested. And Matthews and these guys who aren't going to take part in this penalty kill are just sitting there. And then you get the penalty kill, and Boston scores, sucks a little more energy out of the game. You kind of get it back and going again, and then you take another penalty, which absolutely was a penalty, Dermott tripping down. I think it was DeBrusque, I can't remember for sure, but that was absolutely a penalty. Sucks a little more time out. And before you know it, Matthews has spent most of the period sitting on the fucking bench, and the crowd is dead. And it took forever to get it back. The second period, Boston dominated. And the third period, for the most part, Toronto was really good. But that whole thing swung on, and it's not an excuse. It's a legitimate penalty. And I mean, the glass is broken. What are you going to do? You have to fix it. I understand. But the whole thing swung so far, so fast, right? I felt really good at the early part of that first. And all of a sudden, the whole thing just changed on a dime, man.
Yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with those penalties. And yeah, I mean, Matthews sitting on the bench for too long when he's your best player, or at least been the best
he's
offensive
been
player.
So good the last few games.
He has, right? I mean, you don't want your best player on the bench. That's right. That's just common sense. I would maybe argue Riley's been our best guy, but definitely Matthews has been the guy who's been putting the puck in the net. So you want him on the ice.
Riley was jumping
time.
Early in that first too. Couple of big chances. He scores the goal. Yeah.
I think, and you know, this was the Babcock interview at the end, and he really put it into perspective. He said, you know what? We showed up on time. We were jumping. We were skating.
Yeah.
And the penalty. You know, and then the next penalty, and we just never kind of recovered from that.
That's right.
I think that had a lot to do with it, and not so much the guys weren't on the ice, but it did seem that at this point, when they get a power play, the team's a little deflated. Whether it's a combination of they feel they're not getting the calls, or the calls are going against them, or that they just can't stop Boston right now.
Well, Boston's at like 45% power play. Like, holy fuck.
Yeah, and see, that's where you got to look at Babcock. And I mean, definitely the players a bit because they're the ones on the ice.
Yeah.
But this is game six now. They've been running the same power play over and over and over. We need to figure out a way to stop it. At the end of the day, we know they're doing a 1-3-1. You got to find a way to just stuff it out. And they haven't done that except for game five, which surprisingly was the game that we absolutely dominated.
Yeah.
Boston is going to get those chintzy calls every once in a while because the officials feel like they need to. The Leafs can't make excuses anymore about
this. No, and
that's
the thing.
They just need a way to stop it.
Leaf fans, we wanted this. We wanted it called more closely. We wanted this shit called because in game two, when it wasn't, we got owned, right? Mm-hmm. That's a Boston-style game. We have gotten the officiating we need, but we haven't killed the fucking penalties. So I'm looking at Zdeno Chara still being able to just hack and whack at people. I'm looking at some of the bullshit that's going on. Like, I don't understand that because if the Tyler Ennis thing is a penalty, then so is half of what Zdeno Chara did today.
Sure.
But I won't say the refs killed us. It's just not. And I'm sitting here and half my frustration, I mentioned Twitter a couple times, is people are super pissed about Marlowe. And you go, Patrick Marlowe needs to be scratched. And you go, yeah, he hasn't been good, and he probably should be scratched. But guess what? When fucking Kadri is suspended, you have no one.
That's right.
The lineup
that's in
is doing okay, most of it, right? In sustaining the loss of Kadri. But that's what happens when you pull a guy as good as Nazem Kadri out of the lineup. It's not that Nylander gets hurt. It's not that you're playing your good guys too much. It's you have to play your shit too much. And I'm sorry, but that's Patrick Marlowe now. Now, we can talk about deboning him down to the fourth line and moving some other people around. We can have that debate. That's fine. But stop with we have to scratch him. For who? Who's coming in?
Yeah. I that's where I'm sitting on this. I have no problem with Patrick Marlowe being on this team or being in this lineup or getting ice time. But he can't be on the ice for as much time as he's on currently. That's more my gripe. Because he's still a great hockey mind. And if you're really watching the game... Yeah, and if you're really watching the game, he's always in the right place.
Yeah.
He always, whenever there's a puck coming around the boards, who's the first guy there?
Yeah.
It's him and Nylander all the time on that line. The problem is right now, Patty Marleau is a step too slow to actually do anything productive with that puck.
Yep, that's right.
So is he hurting us? He's hurting us in not being able to do anything with the puck.
Right.
I don't think he's been a huge liability. No, but he's definitely been okay.
He's not getting to the loose pucks he used to get to in the offensive zone. He's not able to step around. And so people are complaining up and down. And believe me, I understand the frustration that he's played two or three shifts in the last 3 minutes of the game when we're down. Who do you want there? Because that would be Kadri. Kadri would be out there with Nylander and whoever. Then you go to the Matthews group. Then you go to the Tavares group. Marlowe wouldn't be a part of that. But he has to be now. And so
we're asking a lot of them right now.
Yeah. And we shouldn't be, but that's what happens because of the Kadri. And everybody's just forgotten. And I guess that happens because the thing was, I don't know, 4 or 5 games ago. But that's where you run into the depth issue, right? That's where you can't just slice a guy capable of scoring 30 goals a season out of your lineup and assume it's going to be okay. They've done a nice job of weathering this storm, but you still see it now and then, right? And we saw it in game 5 where they were so good. They couldn't kind of... You know, they got those two in the third period, but how long did it take to break through, man? The matchups that we had coming into this series are just not as beneficial to us as they were going in. They're still okay, but they're not as deep as we were when we started.
I'll go a step further with that, even on the defensive end, right? Because we've basically taken John Tavares out of offensive role to shut down the Bergeron-Marchand line.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to really let JT open up even part of the game, the next guy you're going to put on that line is Nazem Kadri.
Yep.
You're at least going to keep him out there to maybe, you know, just play that defensive center role. And now, can you, like you said, you've lost that guy who's a very capable guy, a guy who's kind of a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
Or a B-plus Swiss Army knife, at least.
Yeah, you wouldn't rush to pull Kadri off like you do with Nylander when Bergeron comes out. And what that means on the next shift is Tavares gets to play against Corrali or Coyle or somebody like that. And if Boston wants to do that, fine, we can do that, right? But when you lose Kadri, it changes it, and you have to pull Nylander off. And I wanted to ask you about this because I'm starting to see, not a ton, but a little bit of criticism of Mitch Marner in this series, who, aside from, you know, the couple of blocks in game 3 there that saved the game, has not done very much since. Tavares offensively hasn't done much since game 1. And I think if you'd have told me at the beginning of the series that that line wasn't going to do much offensively, but they were going to keep Bergeron in check, I'd have been okay with it. If we could saw that off at even and then let our depth go against their depth to see who was going to win, I think I would have told you I'd be okay with it. But once we lost a little bit of that depth, I felt like my expectations of that Tavares line to not just contain Bergeron, but start to maybe dominate him a little, maybe got a little out of whack. And we talked the last time we did one of these pods about how big it was that Tavares was cleaning out Bergeron on the faceoffs. That has stopped, and Bergeron is now dominating Tavares on the faceoffs again. What are your thoughts on that Tavares line? Do you need them to do a little something offensively, or is it reasonable just to ask them to shut down Bergeron and that's it?
Oh, man. The fucking such a tough call. Here's the thing. I'm still on board with if it's a 50-50, I'm pretty happy.
Right.
The problem is...
It hasn't been.
It hasn't been, right? So when you go back to the draws, which we talked about so much the other day, right? Getting puck possession makes a huge fucking difference.
Yeah.
Right. And you lose that puck position and all, you know, the next 30 seconds, 45 seconds, you're running around. And by the third period, you're out of gas. Right. This is literally a war at this point, you know, game 6, game 7. So these little things like faceoff draws, you got to be on the winning side of that 50% coin flip.
Yep.
Especially when the games mean this much, you need to be that high. And when you are one of the highest paid players in the NHL, in which Tavares is and Marner wants to be, you need to produce when this matters, right? These are the days that John Tavares used to dominate, right, during those cup runs. This is when you just looked over and you knew Jonathan Toews was just going to take over the game.
Yep.
And listen, I'm not criticizing John Tavares at all with this because he's been given a very huge role, you know, try to shut down Boston and maybe one of the best one-line teams in the league.
Right.
And they haven't been beating us at even strength. Where they've been beating us has typically been on the power play.
Yep.
So it's hard to hate on them right now, but you also want them to score, for God's sakes.
Yes.
And they have the capability of it, and they've had chances, not so many this game, but they've had some the last couple, and they just haven't put the puck in the net, right? John Tavares has gotten in a handful of times a series in tight and just keeps putting it directly into Tuukka Rask over and over again. You got to feel like he's maybe feeling a little bit of pressure. To me, Marner looks a little bit beat up.
I think so too.
You know, for everybody all regular season who was saying, you know, how are you going to pay Tavares and Matthews more money because they're looking at regular season numbers. This is why.
Yep.
Right? And not saying this guy doesn't deserve a little bit of cash, but he's obviously one of the most skilled guys in the league. But when it's counting, you know, you got Chara, who's twice his size, who's just beating him around. He looks a little beat up. He's starting to look a little gun-shy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Especially this game, he looked a little hesitant.
I thought he was bad tonight, frankly.
Yeah.
I thought he had a bad game. And I thought Willie, who I always go to bore for, I thought he was bad tonight, too. And I thought Willie is taking some criticism at times that he hasn't deserved. He's not a big man. He doesn't like to play the physical game, but he's gone into the corners. He's gone, you know, against the boards, against Coyle and some of these third liners that he's playing and dug it out. Tonight, he was not good.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think for the most of the series, he's been a guy who's, again, been in the right place.
Yep.
He's been using his speed. He's been giving his body up. He's been very unlucky with points.
Yep.
I think, and a part of that's being on that third line right now with Patty Marleau.
And Brown, yeah, that's not a good pairing for him. That's not a right? good trio for him.
I thought they should have maybe bumped him up to the Matthews line.
But again,
especially when we needed a goal.
I was screaming for that when the series started. But once Kadri went out, you have nothing. I don't want Goat playing third line minutes at center, right? Nick Patan has played, what, two games since he got traded here?
Yeah.
He had to go to the middle. Otherwise, it was going to be Marleau, and that was going to be a fucking disaster. What I need is for them to put Moore or Ennis or somebody on one of those sides with him. If it's, you know, either move Brown down or move Marleau down and give him a little more finish somewhere with a little speed who can get something done for him, right? When the series started, I was right with you screaming, put Willie back with Matthews. Once Kadri went out, I don't think they had a choice. He had to go to the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue that overall point. Yeah. I think more in the context of, hey, we're down by a goal with 12 minutes left
sure.
in the third period
sure.
at home.
I would have tried it in the third.
Like, let's try that now because we shouldn't even really be playing our third and fourth line
yeah.
all that much. You should be able to condense your third and fourth line to one line at that point anyways.
Yep. Yep.
Regardless, you know, pick names out of a hat. I don't care.
Yeah, but you're double shifting those big guys
lines.
Over and over
That's
and over.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? You've still got a timeout to use. You want to just double shift the hell out of them because if you can cut this game off today, you've got time to recover.
Yep. Yeah.
And if you don't, too bad, it's the playoffs. you got to win this game at home.
Coming into this one, and some of this will have changed, but I don't have the most recent stats right in front of me. Boston outshot Toronto something ridiculous like 42-24 today. But coming into this game, Toronto had more hits, had more shots, had more even strength goals, had more high danger scoring chances. Everything indicated that Toronto, for the most part in this series, has been the better team. We're getting crucified by that power play and our own, quite frankly, which isn't connecting. What is your confidence level going into Game 7 back in Boston? I'll tell you, mine is higher than it was last year, and last year we made it super interesting. But at the same time, you've let this veteran team up off the mat. They're going home. You didn't want to be going there. And I just don't know, despite Toronto being the best road team in the league this year, if you want to have to win 3 out of 4 in Boston.
Well, you know what? I like yourself, I'm way more confident this year than I was last year. Last year, to me, it was just a write-off.
Yeah.
And I just didn't feel confident at all. They were too young of a team, too inexperienced of a team.
And they made it interesting, but they
and
didn't
still
really belong.
Made it interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's right. They were outmatched. They were outclassed last year.
Yeah.
This year, like you said, this is the best road team, and we had a really horrible home record for whatever reason that is. They'll have to really revisit that next over the offseason because it was kind of a pitiful home record, to be honest with you.
Yes.
This team seems to respond every time their back's against the wall.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the one thing you can say about this team. Every time the Toronto media or the media in general, all the hockey talking heads seem to count this team out. It's like they tend to take it personally and they come out firing. And it seems to be when they have that a little bit of confidence, that's when they get caught off guard. So do I feel more comfortable with them playing in Boston for game 7 than I would with them playing in home in Toronto if they had went into Boston to force game 7? Way more confident because I feel like this team right now is they're going to come back with a much stronger performance. I didn't expect Boston to roll over, nor should have anybody have.
Right. Well, and that's what I said at the beginning, right? Like, we all knew we were headed here, and yet it was so frustrating to get here. Like, you didn't have to. You could have. And it really felt to me for the first 5 or 10 minutes of that game this afternoon that they were going to do it. And then it all just changed really quick, right? I just...
It didn't. You know, and as frustrating as that is, and not to get you riled up more, as I told you, I was at my parents' house watching the game with my entire family.
And, yeah.
You know, everybody's fairly bummed out after that game. And I said I had to leave to get home to watch the Raptor game. Also, I didn't want to get drunk. So since I had to drive back home.
I had no such problem.
No such problem, eh? Yeah, I didn't want to have to leave my car out in the burbs today. So
right.
I thought, you know, let me go home before I start drinking my sorrows right now. And I looked at my cousin and I said, you know what the worst thing is? We knew we were going to get here, right? We knew this was the fourth and fifth best teams in the NHL over a long season.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to go seven games. I don't know many people who didn't think this was going seven games.
Right.
And like you said, we're frustrated as hell because we're the ones finally who gave up the 3-2 lead.
Yes.
In the past couple seasons, we've always been the team to push that seventh game. So I think this is a different mentality. It's frustrating. I don't want you to be, you know, I don't want you throwing things at people in Ottawa tonight and tomorrow and... unfollowing more thousands of Twitter followers. I'm doing my best here for you, right? It's still a game seven, and it's the best and worst thing in sports.
Yeah.
Especially in hockey.
And I had someone tweet that at me today and said, well, at least we got a game seven coming. Nothing better in sports. And I had to quote him like, yeah, but also nothing worse in sports, right? It's hard, man. And it's just, you just feel like, everything about this, like I said, all the stats say Toronto's been better. Even the pattern, right? We win one, they win one, we win one, they win one. It should be our turn, right? It should be back to us. But is this the time?
Statistically, it's our turn.
Yes. Is this the time that they break the pattern, right? What stupid fucking bounce is going to happen? What, like, the first power play goal, and believe me, I've been right there with you because you texted me and said, got to get the fucking power play. And I'm cursing and saying the same shit here. But when you watch the highlights back later, it wasn't really the penalty kill. They lost a faceoff. Marchand jumps in, gets a swat at it. It bounces off. Hainsey's padding in. And so you go, yeah, that sucks. And yes, it's a power play goal given up by our penalty kill. But what the fuck? Right?
Yeah, like, that was a lucky bounce.
That's hard
goal, right?
To blame the penalty kill for that, right? Like,
you can't blame the penalty kill. You can't blame the goalie. That's
right.
Just you dig at it enough times, and sometimes those ones go in. That, and
yeah.
I mean, that definitely took the sting out of it a little bit for me.
It didn't take any of it out for me. It just meant I'm trying to control who I'm pissed at, right? And so my penalty kill, you go, all right, I'm letting you off the hook there, but fucking Brad Marchand.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't want to blame the penalty kill for that goal, but what I blame the penalty kill for that goal was that first minute of the penalty.
Yeah,
was absolute just heartache the whole time.
Yeah,
they were just. I mean, I know they're trying to take the bumper guy away from in front of the front of Freddie.
Yeah, and you could see Boston trying to get down low to Johansson, right, going across instead of up to Bergeron, and Freddie took that away a couple of times. But now someone, you better move to that, right? And now does that free Bergeron up again? And
I can't remember who scored the goal, but maybe it might have been Krug. I think he scored the second power play goal, right?
Yeah, I think so.
If you look back at the replay, they've got all four people below our forwards.
Yeah. What are you doing?
You know, our forwards have to be responsible enough to make those adjustments, and at least one of them has to drop down and take some passing lanes away, pressure on the guy with the puck.
Well, and they always send – I like – Zach Hyman as a penalty killer, and he and Marner have been pretty good together, but Hyman is like 47% on the draws all year when shorthanded. He's not a center, and against Bergeron, who's one of the best, he's getting cleaned the fuck out. And I'm sorry, in game seven, I know Tavares, you're not a penalty killer, but you're coming out for that draw. If you win it, you go to the bench for Hyman. If you don't, then you're stuck out there until you fucking clear it, man. We need to win some more of those. It just seems like the power play always starts with them getting possession because one of your best two penalty killers is, you know, not a center, right? So you're always losing the draw. I'm starting there with my adjustments, bringing someone else in to win that faceoff.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. And like we just talked about, right? Your best guys have to be your best guys. in the playoffs, and more than that, they have to be your best guys in game seven.
Well, and your coach has to be at his best, right? If this isn't working, time to adjust, man. Tavares is capable of killing a penalty. You don't want him to, so fine. Win the faceoff, shoot it down, get off, and bring Hyman on.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, as you bring Babs up, I think Babs, we've talked about this. I like Babs.
Yeah.
I like him as a coach. I think he's a good coach. I think he's one of the best five coaches in the league. He's been that way for the last 15 years or so now.
Yeah.
Only in Toronto do we ring these fucking guys out for no fucking reason. Bunch of guys who have never played hockey in their life telling the guy with gold medals and Stanley Cups how to coach.
Yeah.
Now, did he make a mistake today pulling the goalie a little too early?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, he was calling for the guy.
We didn't even have possession.
That's more to me, you know? Like, people were upset that they called him out too early. I'm like, no, it's the possession we're worried about. Like,
I'll argue with you, Matt. I thought it was a little too early given you're down by one and you had the better of the chances anyway. I know this is the trend that you do it earlier and earlier now, and I'm fine with that when it's a two-goal deficit and it's like three and a half minutes. I'm probably waiting another 30 to 45 seconds before I do it. I'm certainly waiting until you have possession. It's not a hill I want to die on. Like, I get it.
To me, it's a possession in that offensive end. With 2 minutes, if you have possession in their end,
yeah,
pull the fucking goalie.
Yeah, okay.
Because once you have possession, let me tell you, if I've got 6 minutes of 2 minutes of 6-on-4, it's a lot better than 1 minute of 6-on-4, right?
No, I understand the theory. I just, Boston's a tricky team to keep hemmed in, you know, and you had the better of the chances anyway. So, you know, like I said, it's not a hill for me to die on. I kind of get it. I might have waited 30 more seconds, but I'm not roasting Babs over the 2 minutes thing. I'm kind of roasting him on the possession, though.
Well, I'm. You know what upsets me about it is even if you're pulling Freddie at that point when you're coming into the zone.
Yeah.
It was your fucking third line out there.
Yes. Well, you know, we kind of covered that, right? Like, no more Marlowe in the last 2 minutes. No more Brown in the last 2 minutes.
We had Johansson out there trying to dig the puck down.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm yelling at. I'm thinking, this isn't Matthews going to the corner to win the puck.
Well, Johansson's his winger, right? So he's kind of stuck in that, you know, the part of the line change. So I don't know. It's fucked up, man, when your depth is hurting a little bit like ours is right now. It's funny. When things are going well, you kind of go, you know, maybe we can do this without Kadri. Maybe that's somebody you look at moving in the offseason, maybe, whatever. But when it's not going well, you sit there and go, fuck, would I like to have that guy in my lineup right now?
Oh, Jesus. Listen, you're not moving Kadri at $4.5 million, let me tell you
much. I think you're right. But
that's a goddamn steal.
But there's going to be an important conversation had that says, this is 2 years in a row where you cost us. Can we trust you when we need you the most? And that's going to be an important conversation this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, we could have a conversation about why he's the guy who got the suspension that he got.
Okay.
I think that's we need about 2.5 hours of talking audio for that because there's a lot to dig into on that one.
I agree.
And you know, if
but he did see the red mist, he did go for it.
He definitely did go for it. Yeah. The guy who he went after almost tried to end his season.
Yeah, it's true.
And I don't. for all these talking heads who talk about the code, who all of a sudden don't talk about the code when it's Nazem Kadri,
yeah.
Let me tell you, man, it's not a good look for anybody with a brain who can see both sides of the stories.
That's true,
there,
man. I agree with you on that, and you're right. We can get into that on another day because it's a deep fucking well that we're gonna end up down. But it's important.
But to your point about the depth, right? I mean, if any team makes a run, as much as we've sat here and said, listen, this team's going to live and die by their best players. Every playoff team that goes deep always has a third line guy who steps up in the playoffs.
Yep.
And to be honest, neither team has seen this yet.
It's
right?
True. It's true.
The Bruins have been a one line team for the most part, and so have the Leafs. Both teams need that guy in the third line to step up, whether it's and I know they're maybe not third line guys, but a guy like Johnson, a guy like Kapanen.
Yeah.
These guys have to put an important goal in. I know Kapanen got one last game.
I know, yeah.
But
not enough
when you're
playing with Matthews.
Not enough, and he's a guy who's been around and sniffing around the net, but not doing what he did all regular season.
No, you're right.
And the fucking Leafs need somebody like that to step up and put a goal in, right? The hallmark of those teams in the early 2000s, right, were guys like Corson and Tucker who would come in big when the Leafs needed them.
Korolev. I watched some highlights today of Leafs Senators game 7 in 2004. Chad Kilger scores the opening goal of the game.
Fuck, there's a name from the archives, eh?
For sure.
Well, somebody tweeted out the lineup from the last time the Leafs went through, and you might have been the guy who retweeted or liked it. Maybe that's why it popped up in my timeline.
Yeah.
The one that caught my eye was Ponikarovsky centering the fourth line.
Yeah, with Antropov and Domi, I think.
Yeah, and I thought, fuck's sakes, like, what a talented fucking fourth line that was.
For sure.
You know, even a guy like Domi, who, you know, scored 20 goals a couple times. Or sorry, maybe he scored about 15 a couple times. Yeah. But, I mean, even in the OHL, he could put the puck in the net when he gave him a chance.
I'm referring to that video I watched today. He's the one who races into the zone, breaks up the defenses, the Ottawa breakout with a hard forecheck, and sets up a sweet pass to Kilger to open scoring in the game. You're like, where the fuck did that come from, right? Yeah. But
these guys could play hockey.
That's game 7. You need somebody to step up. Like, you need Connor Brown to get one in game 7. You need Tyler Ennis to get one, right? Or something like that. You need something like that to happen.
And Connor Brown's been playing well, man. His forecheck's been good. He's definitely had a fire under his ass. He just hasn't been able to put the puck in the net.
And I think I'm fine with him playing with Nylander as that defensive conscience and a guy that'll forecheck a bit. If it's somebody else on the other side, I need Ennis or somebody over there who can finish a little more, right? You can't have Brown and Marlowe there. Like, you got to have a little more skill somewhere.
So what would be your thought? Do you move Marlowe down to the fourth line? Who do you move up?
Yeah, I think I would probably go to Ennis with Brown and Nylander. And then Marlowe goes down with Gauthier and Moore. Some people that know the Marlies better than me are much higher on Trevor Moore and would move him up there. He doesn't have as much finish. He's a little bit like Connor Brown in the, maybe better, but a little bit like that in terms of getting in fast. And he's done that a few times with his wheels, got in there and forechecked hard. I like that. So I would be fine with that too, but something's got to change. And I like Tyler Ennis as a veteran who's got some scoring touch. He's quick. He's shown he was going right after Chara in the last game. So he's got no fear. I need something a little different, right? And I would even be fine with switching it all together. Switching Nylander's both his wingers. So he's now playing with Moore and Ennis, and Gauthier's playing with Marlowe and Brown. Like, even that would be fine with me, but something's got to get juggled.
I'd be good with any of those because I really think this has got to be a three-line game.
Yeah.
Right? You got to lay it all on the line. It's got to be a three-line game. There's no excuse for playing your fourth line. The other big thing that I really hated that Babs did was after that first goal, we threw the fourth line out.
I know. Stop doing that. After a power play, after a goal, after we're going to go to the fourth line, just stop. Those guys are playing too much. And I know some of them are only playing like 7 minutes, but it's when you're putting them out. Like,
yep.
There are times in the game where he just keeps rolling the lines, rolling the lines, rolling the lines. And I don't want to see Freddie Gauthier on the same line or on the same rotation as Austin Matthews. That, like, break that up a bit. Don't be so predictable. Go back to your big dogs.
As much as I say I love the guy as a coach and his fundamentals and his, the way he builds a team,
things.
Definitely his one, you know, the hill he dies on is his consistency, right?
Yeah.
He set something out at the beginning of the year and he's going to follow that through. And there's good and bad to that too, right? There's coaches who change too much and he's on the other side of that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a little bit of stubbornness, right? I'm going to show you that I'm right because Patrick Marleau is going to score to tie this. And you're like, no, he's not.
The sad thing with Marleau is what we're seeing is he's too old at this point, right?
The sad thing is there's another year at $6 million.
Fuck, I know. That's the sad thing,
that's
right?
Like,
can we make him a coach?
Yeah.
Is that something we could do?
Luxurious
can we
stay
trade
on
him to
Bobita
Arizona?
Island. Yeah. Holy fuck.
He's a guy who at the beginning of the season was playing pretty well. I think he still ended up finishing with 15 goals, didn't he?
Yeah, in that neighborhood. But he's got three in the last 30 games.
Oh, yeah. He definitely fell off a cliff, and I think that's just age, man. This is a young man's game, and older guys like him just can't keep up. I mean, the fact that he's still in the league is just a testament to him and his rituals, and I think he's definitely been a positive influence on some of the younger guys on the team.
Totally agree with that.
They definitely, you know, advertise that quite a bit.
And they love him. The younger guys love him.
that doesn't mean he needs to have that much ice time.
That's right.
True, I don't even.
I think he finished at 16 or 17 minutes tonight.
Yeah.
That's way too much. 12 at the most for that guy.
That means he played as much as Norm.
Yes.
Norm Powell in the Raptors game today. Like, that's insane.
Yes, for sure. I think we're going to wind this one down. I don't know what to say about Game 7 that we haven't already said. We both kind of said where we're at in terms of comfort level and this and that. I'm not going to offer a prediction because, A, we already did that on our Instagram at Tall Can Audio, so everybody kind of knows where I stood there. But also, nothing about this series has gone the way I would have expected it to. There's been no momentum. There's been no ability game to game to track what's happening. What I will say right now, conclusively, before any of you tweet at me, there will not be a post Game 7 podcast that night. I will either be emotionally devastated or I will be just hammered. And either way,
I'm pretty sure.
Well, there could be that. But there won't be a show. There's just going to be no way to, you know, if I say there will be and then the unthinkable happens, it'll just be me sitting here sulking, and who wants to listen to fucking that? So there won't be a Tuesday night show. Perhaps the next day. We'll see how things shake loose. But it's a big Game 7 coming. The same night, the Raptors will have Game 5, a chance to eliminate the Orlando Magic and move on. What is the series with Philly at right now, the 76ers?
It's also at 3-1. So okay. They might wrap up tomorrow night.
Okay,
I think they're back in Philly tomorrow. So they might wrap up tomorrow. Boston wrapped up earlier today, 4-0. I believe Milwaukee plays tomorrow night. They should wrap up their series with the Pistons 4-0 and get rid of Dwayne Casey.
What,
so we won't have to look
round.
At his stupid face.
Slaps and get out of here.
Yeah. The Eastern Conference hasn't been that exciting. I think we all knew, and I think we talked about this before the playoffs started, it was going to go kind of how everybody predicted. It's the Western Conference that was always going to be a little bit more interesting.
Sure, yeah.
Just the way everything kind of drew out. And I mean, that being said, it's really about two series, right? It's the Denver Nuggets and the Spurs tied at 2, and Portland up 2-1 right now in OKC with that game going on. So that might drag the first round out a little bit, when that would, you know, probably be good for the league, get a little bit of competitiveness, and the real games start in the Eastern Conference, hopefully by the end of the week.
At Matt Does Physio on Instagram is where you can find his blog. What's up there the latest now, man?
Oh, God, who's the latest one? DeMarcus Cousins tore his quad a couple days ago. So, unfortunate injury for a guy. Yeah. Poor guy just came back from Achilles surgery almost a year ago, just a little over a year ago. He'd come back for maybe about 2 months and had this unfortunate injury. So, that's the latest injury one. I don't think I'm going to do one on Shoemaker because it just makes me too sad with all the shit going on right now.
Yeah.
To talk about another pitcher tearing his ACL for the Blue Jays.
Honestly.
Just chasing a ball down. And so I think I might skip that one. But hopefully there's not many more injury blogs to write up in the NBA, because it's always kind of a sad one to do, you know?
Absolutely.
Especially this time of year.
You can hit him up on Instagram. Matt Does Physio is where you'll find him. We're at Tall Can Audio. Same thing on Twitter. He's at Matthew Lang. We're at Tall Can Audio. Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. We'll wind this one down. Like I said, no show on Tuesday, but probably look for something on Wednesday. We'll look to do something around then, when hopefully things have calmed down a little. We'll see you all in the next Tall Can Sports.
We're not going to be fucking sucked this year.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.